Welcome back to Big Brave Business. I'm your host, Sarah K. Heater. Big Brave Business is a podcast where we challenge the status quo of traditional business practices. So if you're ready to challenge norms, rewrite the rules, and redefine what it means to lead with courage and integrity, then grab a notebook and let's dive in. Welcome back to Big Brave Business. I am so excited to bring you the very first guest of season two that isn't Amanda. I feel bad calling Amanda a guest because she is the original other co-host, permanent co-host. So anyway, my guest today is Harriet Formby. Harriet is a fractional CFO, ICAEW chartered accountant, trauma of money certified practitioner, and business mentor behind Below the Line Finance and Get Number Savvy. Based in the lush countryside in the United Kingdom, she's dedicated to empowering conscious business owners to transform their purpose-driven journey into a financial success story through fractional CFO services, training, consultancy, and mentorships that help us reimagine capitalism for a more compassionate world. So you can see why I wanted to have her on. I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, amazing. I'm so happy to be here as well. Oh, it's brilliant.
I wanted to sit down and chat with you about this idea of the trauma of money. I think on this podcast before, in previous episodes, Amanda and I dug into a little bit of our own money stories and how that comes up in entrepreneurship. And just, I feel like entrepreneurship in particular really makes you face all the things. We all have money goals going into business and going into business leadership. We definitely are monetarily driven, you could say. But at the same time, realizing as much as I want money, I also have a lot of fear and frustration around money is mind fuck. Like, I have had to really work on that quite a bit. So I'm curious, from your experience and what you your life experience and your experience working with your clients, where does fear and frustration about money come from for most entrepreneurs? And what about for you specifically?
Yeah, it's such a common theme, I think, isn't it, that we have to confront when we go into entrepreneurship. So I would say, in terms of that piece, yeah. So from my experience of kind of people I've worked with, and also just like my studies and sort of interest just generally into what is going on with money and us as people, is two things really. So there's this whole confronting thing that you at some point you're going to realize is that everything we know about money is coming to us from conditioning, from our upbringing, from our communities and the way we've been taught to think about money. It comes from existing in like a whole capitalist environment where there's certain rules that maybe don't make a lot of sense, but we've been led to believe that's the only way it works and that's the truth. And that's all mixed in with like our own identity in relation to money, our own experiences with money and ourselves. And suddenly, maybe we've got by and we've been in a job and we've got a salary and we've got all the benefits that go with a salary and we can just about work it out because it's a monthly thing. We get paid, we do our work, we get paid. That just about makes sense to us. And then when you become an entrepreneur, you've got the sudden realization that you are existing within an own venture. So you've got the whole existing with clients, customers, the marketplace, and also you are running a business. So you've got all these moving pieces. You're suddenly having to not just make a living for yourself, but you've got to make sales for your business. You've got to make sure people pay you, that you've got clients to work with you in months to come. You've suddenly got all these like business expenses to pay, and maybe you've got freelancers and staff and taxes, and suddenly you're the one that's got to work it out. Or, you know, within your own business structure, you've also got to find the funds to make investments. And so suddenly you may be waking up to like some conditioning and the backdrop of what's gone on with money through your life, and suddenly you're also in charge of a business and there's so much responsibility. So it's no wonder that we are, one, terrified of, are we going to make it work? Have we got the money here in place to do this? And also, it's literally so overwhelming sometimes to be confronted by all of these things that you almost just glaze over, and your mental capacity to handle it just goes, no, not today. Not today, thank you. Too many things. Where do I even begin? And it is something I would say that it does hit you. It does hit you at some point. It might hit you all at once. It might be something that you go through in stages. And for me in particular, I would say the thing that kind of I woke up to, when, because I was somebody that came from a more corporate background and then set up a business about 4 years ago, is really that kind of scarcity mindset and the what ifs coming in of, what if I don't sign clients? What if I don't have the money there? And we're always conditioned that kind of their money in the capitalist system is a scarce resource. We've been trained that there's not unlimited money, and we have to work really hard to put the resources to good use. We can't make a mistake. And that was something that came, you know, that I had to work through, as well as like looking around at people like me and going, I wonder what they're doing. I wonder how they've managed to get to that size. Comparing myself and my money position, or even some of it, I didn't even know necessarily how other people were really doing in business, because you never really know. But you start to think, well, maybe I should be there by now, and maybe I'm behind. And that's the frustration side, because you're like, I really want to be here, but actually I'm not there yet. And it's not like overnight success. There's actually a lot that goes into this whole thing of keeping a business going and funding our way through it.
One thing that's been really interesting for me that touches on what you said is like the comparison of my relationship with money when I had a 9-to-5 kind of day job compared to being an entrepreneur. And I think there are some things about finances that are definitely scarier as an entrepreneur, because theoretically you don't have the consistent paycheck and whatnot that you had in a salaried job. But I think I could argue against that. I actually feel more secure personally from entrepreneurship than I do from the idea of just one job being all of your income. And that comes from the fact that I got laid off as the primary earner in my family. And that really changed my story of the stability of 9-to-5s. But what I think is interesting for me personally, when I had a 9-to-5, my understanding of money was almost like an us versus them thing, where some of us have money, or some people have money and some people don't. And if you're one of the worker bees, you're one of the don'ts. You have enough money to get by, hopefully, but that there are people who make oodles and noodles of money, and you're just not one of them. That's like the people who are higher up than you. And when I started my business, to a certain extent, I feel like it put me on an even playing field as far as my opportunity to earn is the same as anybody else's. It really is then about putting yourself out there, marketing effectively, having a good offer, having a good relationship with the people that you're serving, and you have just as much of an opportunity to earn oodles of money as anybody else. Whereas in the corporate kind of machine, I feel like it doesn't matter how smart and talented you are. That doesn't mean you're going to make money. Whereas I feel like in entrepreneurship, you do have the opportunity to make money based on what value you're putting out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense, because you're right. And especially when we've attacked, even if you're a professional and you really know what you're doing, you're labeled with whatever your job title is and whatever type of organization you work in. And that creates like a band of, you can earn this much. If you work really hard, you might get promoted to here, but you're just, you know, just like other people in that role, and you're no different really. And actually, you have to sit around working long hours, going the extra mile, and maybe you'll get promoted, or maybe you'll get a bonus. But other than that, you're really just stuck in this system. And you're right, when you run your own business, we take ourselves out of that pigeonhole, and we've got this whole potential. There's all of the potential, because you could earn twice, three times as much as you worked in the previous role, potentially. And that's, it doesn't mean that you have to do anything particularly different. You're still working hard, but you've got this ability to shape who you reach out to, what your offers are, how you market yourself, how you price your services, all of that up for grabs. Whereas in a job, all you can really do is network and work harder and work more hours and impress people and hope that you'll be noticed and promoted. And it's quite tricky, even if you've got the skills, the qualifications, and you're good at what you do, it's not always enough to get you where you really want to be.
Yeah. And the maximum amount you're going to make that month is what your salary is, unless you're in a commission-based role, right? If you're in a traditional salaried job, you're going to make what you are guaranteed you are going to make. Whereas in entrepreneurship, you could make nothing, but you could make more money than you've ever made in your life. I think that for me, one of the things that's been really interesting in all of this kind of stuff, my relationship with money coming back up in entrepreneurship, is that overcoming some of those battles, it's a work in progress. Like, I have made a lot of progress. I think a lot of it for me has been learning about my relationship with money and kind of facing it instead of letting it be just the elephant in the room. But I definitely still have some shit that I am trying to unpack and just process and work through and find approaches that work for me. And I think one thing that's been really interesting for me is that when I make money, I spend it. That is a very interesting pattern to notice. So between, you mentioned so many things and it's so real, like the business investments, obviously like my living expenses, even like pleasure spending, right? Because that is part of the reason I'm doing this, so that I make money so I can live the lifestyle I want to live. And then of course, like your team, taxes. There's so many business expenses that just do come up. And I think that I'm very good at getting good deals on things. As in, I think like I generally keep my business expenses pretty low. I think that I can find like a lot of bang for my buck, as they say. And still, I spend the money that I make, which is really interesting. I also have learned about myself that I do have a little bit of fear around this idea that I'm not good with money, that I can't be trusted with money, which is really interesting. I never faced that. I think I did have it when I had a salary at a 9-to-5, but I don't think it ever came up for me that I was bad with money until I was an entrepreneur and I'm making more money than I ever made before. And now I have this fear that I'm bad with money and that I can't be trusted with money. I also have a total aversion to managing money. So I don't like budgeting. I don't like bookkeeping. I don't like taxes. Like, I want to outsource all of those things all the time. If something with money comes up, I want someone else to do it. And honestly, I don't even want to learn about it. I want somebody else to handle it. So just interesting things that have come up for me. I definitely am a type of person that in general, things become less scary when I learn about them. And yet I have a total aversion to learning about money. So that is those are some really interesting trends just for me personally that have come up. And yeah, but I'm curious for you, what are some things that you've worked through or like personally overcome that have helped you, especially working not just with your own money, but with clients? Like, how have you worked through what is your money story? And like, how have you come through overcoming some of those things?
Yeah, it's interesting your perspective, actually, because I am actually similar. So I think there's an expectation that if you work in finance, your personal finances must be amazing. You must be really saving, you must be really like doing all the good things, and you've sorted out your impulses and somehow you're like perfect. But the reality is I've got stuff I'm working through. And I think for me, some of it is similar to you. I spend the money that comes in and I can earn more money, and then the money goes out. And this thing, I think, so one of it is as you grow your business and as you're doing more things, naturally you are going to find that the money goes, because you're like, oh, I'm going to invest in this thing, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, then this is going to happen. And like, you're existing within the economy, like changes there as well. And then there's also this thing of, if you are not used to holding money and you're not used to your bank account being filled up, you're probably, even if it's subconscious, you are going to just continue those behaviors, because like in the past the money's always come in and then gone out. So now what do you do when money comes in? It just goes out, because that's what I've always done. And so for me, I think some of it is like going, okay, a lot of this is subconscious, so I'm actually going to put in place processes that stop me maybe it's actually fine. Maybe I like that the money comes in and goes out to an extent. But if I want to save or I want to put money aside for something in the future and my own self, it's almost like for me, I've had to go, I'm going to make sure that like when money comes in, some of it automatically goes into an account that I can't see and I can't touch and I can't do anything with. And I don't know that's happening. It's just happening in the background. I don't have to deliberately go, I must do this and make myself feel bad about it. It just happens. I'm not going to get involved. For me, that's one of the things going, okay, fine. I will put in place tools that are going to help me with this. And then also looking at why. So what is it? Am I scared of holding money because I'm not used to it? Or is there like some sort of negative connotation of what it means to me to hold the money? And actually, I'd prefer to see it like somewhere because that feels good. It feels nice to buy things. It's soothing. And there is an element that it's actually very soothing. So the other side of that for me is being like, where I can be quite impulsive with buying things and investing in business and courses, in my own spending. And it's going to myself, what can I put in place? Which is kind of how I've got through this, is like to give myself a checking point. So maybe if I would immediately go, yes, I'm going to do that thing, I'll say, okay, I'm going to sleep on it and I'm going to see if tomorrow if I still want to do that thing. And the other thing you mentioned, which I think puzzles us quite a lot, is that we have this, and same for me really, is like this desire that we really want to improve it and we really want to get better, but actually facing it and having to budget and plan and look at the numbers and our bank accounts and our profit and loss accounts, it is too much. And it is, we think it's a personal failing, like we think it's because there's something wrong, we're not doing it, we should do it, why can't we just do it? But the reality is there's so much like emotional stuff there that is making it hard. And if it was something I can sit with a client and I can go through money and it feels different to my own money, if I was, because it's, and so that's how I empathize with it, because actually it's really, it's not, the thing is difficult in itself, like actually doing it, it's that the fact that you're having to confront all of your beliefs and all of your like frustrations about that and telling yourself, why can't I just do this or that? And actually that is the load, that is the pressure on it, and that's the strain. It's not like it's actually difficult, it's the emotional side you've got to deal with. So for me, I have seen this myself, because I'm like, I know about money, I do with clients, but when it's my money, I find every single excuse rather than to like actually sit and look at it. So I found for me what's worked is, one, going on a bit of a healing journey around money is one thing, but actually giving myself grace to say, this is perfectly normal. This is a perfectly normal reaction, because there's so many emotions and so many layers behind it all. And actually, that's okay. I'm okay to feel like this. It's actually acceptable. It's the first thing, is actually accepting that this is fine. This is normal. And there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not a bad person. I'm not inherently bad with money.
Yeah.
I am just somebody that's existing and I'm trying to get through it all. And actually, that can be the first step. There's things you can do that the kind of financial literacy part can be, once you follow the processes and you find something that works and you find a system, that can stick quite well. But it's overcoming this initial thing that you're having to confront, I think, is something that we don't always give it enough respect for how big it is and how big it is to actually have that to deal with, which is what's on top of the good practice and financial literacy piece.
Yeah.
And also, there's obviously nothing wrong with outsourcing. If it saves you up, frees you up to do other things, I think that's absolutely brilliant, to get a bookkeeper and someone to help you with it. But I guess if there's an element that's kind of like an emotional thing that you don't want to look at, sometimes it can be helpful to see that as a separate element to it as well, and say, well, that's actually something else.
Yeah. Sometimes I literally feel like what I need is a financial babysitter, where I don't actually see the money that comes in, to your point about like having an account that just saves money for you and you just don't see it. Like, I almost feel like I need, sometimes, not always, but sometimes I have this craving, like I want to hire a person, and I have people to do, like I have hired people to do the different elements of things that I need help with, but Sometimes I want to specifically hire a person, literally just babysit my money, give me an allowance, tell me how I'm allowed to spend it. And then that way I know that I'm making good choices because I don't trust myself to make those choices myself, which is so crazy because I would trust myself to make really high level choices about so many things in so many different respects. Like, I know what I am capable of, but when it comes with money, I just feel like I'm just a baby. Like, just manage my money for me and tell me how I'm allowed to spend it because I can't be trusted, which is a really interesting thing that's come up for me. And I love that you pointed out, like, specifically, it doesn't make you a bad person, because I think there's a lot of guilt and shame around money. And I actually think that there's also, this is perpetuated further by a lot of the big kind of conversations that are happening about personal finance from kind of financial gurus. I don't know, in the UK, do you know Dave Ramsey? He's so popular in the United States, but I don't know.
I'm not sure, actually. I've come across
him. Okay, well, lucky you. So Dave Ramsey is the biggest personal finance, I guess, guru in the United States. And it's like very much rooted in like religious fundamentalism. And so there's a lot of heavy, extreme Christian undertones, but it's also, there's so much guilt and shame in his methodology and then the way he approaches things. It is even on his kind of talk show, when you call in to get quote unquote coached, it's like you get berated down about how terrible you've been in order to scare you straight to do better with money. And it's interesting because it's not that all his advice about how to manage your personal finances is bad, but the approach, and it certainly has worked for a lot of people, but the approach about it is so based in making you feel terrible about yourself. And so as someone who listens to this or consumes this content, but isn't actually taking the steps, you just get the part where you feel terrible without actually getting the results. And so just having that kind of out there in the world as such a pressing kind of culture around money, is it really reinforces those things about feeling really terribly about yourself. And I'm interested because one of the things that we had talked about bringing up on this call together that I think is really linked to this is about the link between money and creativity. And I feel like, for me personally, my perspective on that would probably really come back to, if your relationship with money is rooted in guilt and shame, which is what capitalism makes you feel, that you're not good enough and you're not worthy. And that's why you aren't in the 1%, right? The reason you aren't a billionaire is because you don't deserve to be one. And that if you could somehow change that worth and you could be more deserving, then you would make money. That's like the capitalist myth, in my opinion. And I think that if you're feeling guilt and shame around money, of course that would affect your creativity, right? And just in general, it seems like an easy answer would be like, you can be more creative if you have more resources. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, what do you feel for you personally, and in the work that you've done, what do you see of like the relationship between money and creativity?
Gosh, it's so interesting. And I'm gonna have to research this, Dave, guy, because that sounds, it's so, kind of goes against a lot of the, it's understandable if it's linked to the religious side, because it's about, there's right and there's wrong and that's it. But the reality is, like, we're humans and there's so much more going on with it, and there's so many reasons, I could go on with it onto it now, but there's so many reasons why that wouldn't work, why do this and otherwise you're really bad, it just doesn't work. But the point with the, and it's all linked back to the kind of capitalist world. And the thing that I kind of see with this, and I'd be really interested in this, if this is your perspective as well, from the kind of culture where you are, is when we look at creativity. So this in the UK, this starts at school, and you are told growing up that you're either creative and you're like really good at words and writing and making beautiful things and doing lovely things that people praise you for, but they don't make money. But you're told that's just nice, that's a hobby, that's not gonna make you money. And then over here you've got children that are really good at logic and maths and sciences, and that they're the ones that are gonna go off, that's the one that you need to pursue, you need to study, that'll get you a really good job. And it puts people into, you're either creative or you're logical and good with numbers. And it says that you can't be the other thing. And I feel like we go into the world of work and into business, and we still carry that story, but you can't cross the two. And also, if you are a creative person, you don't want to be labelled like some boring maths person that's all logical. You're a creative, you're not one of them. And I feel like that's the thing that's coming up is actually, if you identify as being creative, you feel like, I can't be good with money because that's those other people over there. That's not me. And yeah, equally, it's almost if you're good with logic and numbers, you can't be creative. So if you are an accountant or you work in finance or you work in, if you were good with money, that means you can't be creative. And
yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. And I was thinking as you were talking about this trope of the starving artist and this idea that if you choose art, then you're choosing to not have money. There is this myth in society that like, if you're choosing a life of art and creativity, then you're accepting the fact that you will never have money unless you're one of the very few people who like makes it, right? But most people who choose an artistic or creative lifestyle, there's this pressure from society. That means you're choosing to be broke. I even remember, this is like a weird kind of tangential relationship to that. When I graduated with my master's, it was in public policy and public administration. So definitely not art, but at that graduation ceremony, I will never forget that the like dean of the college was giving this speech about how everybody who was pursuing this like advanced degree in this field was so honorable because we chose this knowing we would never make good money. And I remember sitting there at graduation like, wait, I want my tuition back. That's not why I agreed to do this. And that's not an inspiring like way to send me off with this new degree. And even my mom and my grandmother were there to see me graduate. And afterwards, my grandmother was like, so you don't care about making money? I was like, no, I definitely do. And I feel like if that's true, even in that field, like it's definitely true for people who pursue art. Oh, I want to be a writer. I want to be an artist. Or in general, I see myself as a creative person. There's this assumption from society of, oh, I guess you don't care about having money then. And it's no.
And it always goes as far as you shouldn't be asking for money. If you're good with words, if you're good with making useful things and making people feel something, you should give that willingly. It's almost like you shouldn't be charging. Yeah. Why are you charging for this when you're good at it and you're naturally, there's this idea that then it's not worth something, which is no wonder then you can feel like I can't charge. You start questioning that sort of thing because it's been, like you said, that's from the sort of graduation that's been taught to you. But the reality is totally different because actually when you come down to it, if you think about the value of the creative economy, it's huge. So we know this isn't true. We know that the reality is that creative people are actually having this huge impact on the economy. And also, if we think about like innovation and entrepreneurship, it's rooted in creativity. It's rooted in having an idea and having creative solutions to make it happen. It's about new problem solving because you're to make a product, you've got a problem solve. To make services, you've got a problem. What do people need? Okay, how can I make this differently to other people? How can I innovate? And sometimes the money side can make you creative because you're saying, how can I do this more cheaply? How can I deliver more value? How can I price it in this way that people will buy more from me? How can I be creative about that?
Yeah.
But what I see with, I deal with a lot of people who are, would identify as being creative, is what they believe is that they've got to hide that from the money side because if somebody in the finance profession starts talking to them about money, all they're going to do is tell them what they can't do. They're going to tell them, do less of this, budget more, spend
less.
Get back in your box and make it less risky. Whereas actually, if we could be a lot more open, and this is what I sort of believe in myself and how I interact with people, is actually, okay, we get that there's shame, we get there's frustration, but what if we could turn the money around and make this the thing that allows you to be more creative? And like you started there, you were saying about creativity, there's loads of examples of people making good money being creative, and actually that's really valid. We can be really good with money and make more money, And we can turn it around and we can have more impact. We can have more stability in our lives by actually letting creativity and money exist together. They've been separated from us, but actually that there's no good reason why that's happened. It's just the stories we've been told and the things that people have tried to self-limit on us.
Yeah. And if anybody listening is a person who also helps people with their finances, I think I really want to jump on that and say, if I was looking to hire somebody to help me with any aspect of finance, whether it was like tax prep or bookkeeping or personal finance or whatever it is, if I was looking to hire somebody in any of those respects and their marketing and messaging was about, hey, I help you find ways to be creative with your money, that would speak so much more deeply to making me feel both safe and empowered, like excited about approaching my money, if I was approaching it from that perspective, rather than the, hey, we're going to clean it up. We're going to fix your mistakes. We're going to, like, that kind of thing is, oh no, don't look at my mistakes. Don't look at the ways that I'm failing. Yeah. Don't look at, I don't want to show anyone that. I don't want to expose my messy underbelly. Oh, that's private. That's just me. Nobody needs to see that. I'll just sweep it under the rug. But if it was, instead of approaching it from, hey, you feel like crap about your money, let's make you feel better, I'd be like, I don't really want to share this with you. But if you approached it as, hey, I want to help you be creative and empowered and excited about your money, that would speak to me so much more deeply. So I think that's really interesting. I'm curious about you personally, because this is something that's also been an interesting kind of money journey for me in entrepreneurship. As a person who loves to spend the money that I make, I'm constantly planning, what do I want to invest in? What are the investments that I want to make next or in the future or whatever? I'm curious though, what are, for you personally, what are some investments that you really wanted to make but were outside of your budget? And how did you handle that?
Yeah, it's a really good point. So I think, so for me, initially I had to get it in my head that I was building something and I was allowed to invest like in my business. Mm-hmm. And that was weird to me to begin with. So I was like, oh, actually, this is open to me. I don't have to struggle on my own. There are like these services and things that will help me. So for me, it was things like struggled on my own for a little bit, muddling through. It was like, oh, I'd really to join that program or that work with that coach, or I'd love like this system that makes it all much nicer for me that I want to invest in. So for me, it was very much this thing and this, and if I joined it, these are the outcomes, and I really want to do that, or I really want to work with this person because I can see that's really going to help me, and I want to buy systems and software and all the brilliant stuff that makes life easier. But yes, initially I looked at them and I didn't even know this existed, or I didn't even know this program was here. I found it. I started off thinking like I didn't budget for it because I didn't know it was here, and suddenly it's here and I want to do it. So for me, there was like times when I went, oh, I can't do it yet because the money's not there yet. And then I thought, what would be the benefit of doing it? Oh, wow, I could feel like this. I could be like these people. I could see the outcomes of all the people that are using this stuff and are doing these things, and that's like close to my goals. And I thought it's probably worth me like finding the money, and this is personal to me, obviously I'm not sort of saying this is what everybody should do, but for me
an advice thing, just say your personal experience.
It was pretty much, well, I'll pop it on a credit card and I will do it, because I feel like for me that feels like a yes. It feels like my logic side, so I'm chucking my both sides. My logic brain says this is a good investment and I feel aligned with it. So I feel good about it. I, when I look to the future, I feel like this is a good thing to do. So for me, it was a case of I'm going to take a punt on it. I'm going to pop it on a card and I'm going to do it and I'm going to see what the results are and judge from there if it's something I want to continue with again when the time comes, or if it was a bad investment. But ultimately, I mean, this is like anecdote. So it's like for me, I always found that something happened and some money came in. So like for some happy occurrence, I got a refund on something, or I found that I made money. A perfect client just popped along at the same time. That sort of thing happens. That is a bit lucky. It's a bit like wishful thinking sometimes. So for me, it worked out. And mostly, I would say most things I've invested in, I've been quite pleased with the outcome and they've
Yeah.
been pretty good. For me, it was very much, did I want it enough? Could I see it being a good business investment? And did it feel good to me? Did it feel like the right thing to do? And that was like how I moved forward if it was outside of my budget. And the first thing as well, I felt with that was actually like, okay, I didn't actually have a budget for this because I didn't maybe know it existed. But
Yeah.
I'd say like in the future, then I would be thinking about, okay, in the future, I want to put budget aside or to plan my business so I can do more of these things that I like to do. So that's how I've approached it when it's come up like that. So I don't know if that's something that sort of resonates with, yeah.
Yeah, I have it's interesting. I'd say probably earlier in my business when I had less money coming in, then there were a lot of things I really coveted. Some of the really big name people who you follow because you don't know anyone else. So you start at the beginning just with the biggest names. And that's really who you're primarily focused on learning from. And you don't have your own network of people to learn from. And so you're like, oh my gosh, I want to buy everything that they offer. I want all of the things. And they're expensive. They're not affordable.
Yeah.
So it's okay. If I'm only making $3,000 a month in the very beginning of a business, right? Then, or, and some people making much less than that. But if you're making $3,000 a month in the beginning of a business, then when somebody has a $3,000 offer, it's no, I can't do that because I also have to buy groceries. That's not a choice,
Yeah.
right? So unless they offer a really accessible payment plan or something like that, you have to just say, not right now. And I had this wish list of things that I planned to invest in when I had the resources. And what's so funny is that so many of those things, once I did have the resources, the logic wasn't there. It was like, I don't really need this now. And I
I don't
find
need it
that
now.
so
Yeah.
interesting because I feel like a lot of those things are geared toward people who are more at the beginning stages. But if you're at the beginning stages, you probably don't have the budget for it. And that's a whole
Yeah.
other tangent. We could have a whole like podcast episode about that. But I feel like there is an ethical pricing conversation about like, know your offer, know your ideal audience, and then create an offer and a pricing structure accordingly. But yeah, I think for me, most of the things that I haven't been able to afford, but I really wanted to make that investment, most of those things I put on a wish list or a vision board. And then by the time I got there, I didn't need it anymore. And I
Yeah.
will say there has been one like major investment that I made in a personal one-on-one coach. That's the biggest investment I've made in my business. It was $15,000 for 6 months. And when she told me the price on our sales call, I had said straight up, like, I don't have the budget for that. I definitely can't do that. And then I sat down with my partner and I was like, oh, I loved her and I loved this. I loved the call experience and I like really wish I could do it, but this is what it costs. And at the time, I thought, I can't even imagine where $15,000 would come from. I can't even imagine a place where I have $15,000 to just invest in something like that. Like, that sucks. And I ended up working out something with her where I was able to do like payment arrangements. And I actually did end up doing it. And it was wild because I wasn't making very much money, but still all of my bills got paid and she got paid. And I paid $15,000 in coaching. I definitely ended up, I will say, and I've talked about this a little bit before on this show, but I did end up making more than that back as a result of that investment. And because that coach actually became one of my clients for a little while, and she sent me referrals who became clients of mine. So I can see a direct result how that relationship ended up actually being net in my favor. But that is the biggest investment that I've made. And it was literally what you said of sitting down and talking about, okay, here's what I think I could get out of this relationship. Here's why I think this feels really, really important to me. I described it at the time as I felt like I was on the precipice of something with my business where I was standing on a cliff side and I was getting ready to jump. And I felt like I could either jump by myself or I could jump strapped to someone with a parachute. And to me, it felt like I should invest in jumping with someone strapped to a parachute, right? That's what I like was looking for. That was like the metaphors. That's how it felt in my body. And so I was like, this is why I feel like this is worth the investment. And my partner was on the same page as me, and we were able to work out an arrangement where like we made the money work, but it was really scary. And I think investing in stuff you're scared of is also a whole other conversation I would be interested to have with you, but I want to really respect your time. So I feel like we've talked about some really good stuff, but I want, if you have another couple minutes, do you have another couple minutes?
Okay, so
I want to do really two more questions. One is, let's leave off on a high note on this money conversation. And so what is your best tip for business leaders listening about being big and brave with their money?
So I would say, so first off, give yourself like a break. Acknowledge that actually you are existing within a system that is really strange. It's often not in your favor. And all of the things that you've done up to this point, even if they feel like mistakes or you feel like they could be better, they have got you here now. So they're not totally wrong. You've done the best you can to get where you are now. And that is pretty good. That's pretty epic. So even if they're wrong, even if they don't feel great, even if you feel shame,
yeah,
you've survived to this point doing that. First off, that's a big thing. And then I'd say dig in to set yourself up for an exploit. You have to set yourself up well for this, because you could be opening a lot of emotions, a lot of past traumas that are going to make you feel things.
Yeah.
So I'd say set yourself up to, when you're ready to do this, to explore money, to be curious and to feel it. And to look at the past, potentially look at your money story, understand your beliefs and do the journaling work. Work with peers, work with professionals and understand, what is it that I actually believe and why do I believe it? And then you can go, is this something I want to carry forward? Is this something that I want to carry on in my life and in my business? Or is this something I want to change? And at this point, you can start to say, what I'd really like to do is believe that, for example, the examples earlier of creativity, I want to believe that I can be really creative in my business and be secure. That's the new belief I want. I don't want to be feast and famine. And build something around that. And by challenging what we previously believed and what we want now, that's the first step. The financial literacy, the shoulds, the shouldn'ts, that all comes later. Because if you go straight in now with, I must budget, I must cut back, you're going to get so bored with that cycle, you're just going to rebel against it. Or a lot of people will rebel against that advice to cut back, to do what you're told, do the right thing. So I'd say it's really about like finding what's personal to you and aligns to you, and then creating something that's going to feel good, and find your own, like what somebody else has done to get themselves maybe through this belief might not be right for you. So you may have to shop around with, what feels good to me? What are people doing who feel like this? And do I like that idea? Because it's not about do this thing and that's the answer. It's very much follow what feels good to you in that space. So once you're starting to look at the literacy side of it and the planning and what the steps might be and the strategy of it, there is choice there. You don't have to follow one path. So I think there's an element here of actually like going, what's big and brave to me? What do I want? Because my personal desires are not anything like that. Not even people in my industry doing exactly what I want. They might retire somewhere completely different to me. They might want to buy different things to me. They might be happy to work this many hours, but actually I want to work this many hours and a lot less hours and earn more money. So you can't go and just find examples of people and go, I'll do that because that's what somebody does. It's like me. We've got to find our own version of what being big and brave means to us. And then make our goals around money really align to that. So I'd say always from that point, then look to the end goal that really feels good and really feels exciting. It's not about, I want to sell my business for so many million dollars. It's about, what do you want to do with that money at the end of it, though? Like, where do you want to live? What do you want to experience? What kind of lifestyle do you want? That's going to be what excites you to make the money work for you, because otherwise, you'll get bored because it's somebody else's dream. It's got to be aligned to what does feeling good with money look like in your life? Because that's going to be the thing that gets you excited.
There's so many things that you said that I love. I think one thing is journaling, and I want to just call out some of these things, journaling or sitting down and writing out to get to know what your relationship with money even is. And what are the assumptions that you have about money? How would you describe your relationship with money? And I think even for me, something that's been really interesting is going back into my childhood and like generationally, my family story of even my mom's childhood, my dad's childhood, their parents' childhoods and upbringings, like as far back as I know, what has the money story been in my family? What are some of the lessons that were taught generation to generation? How was I raised to understand money and to think about money? And I'm not talking about necessarily specifically like financial literacy, but just as far as my relationship with money. And I think like my biggest tip is that your relationship with money is not going to go away. It is something that stays with you. It follows you into every chapter of your life, no matter how big and successful your life is. That relationship with money comes with you. That stays with you. That's a relationship that is part of your life. And your best opportunity to really be big and brave with it is to engage in that relationship and to help try to shape that relationship to be what you want it to be. And I think that's really related to what you were saying of looking at those assumptions that you have about money and what your money story is and your family money story is. What do you want to carry forward? That's how I think you phrased it. And I loved that because it's like, what do you want to keep taking with you? And what do you want to rewrite? And what would it take to rewrite that? I think it's just such an interesting approach. And the other thing you mentioned that I really want to call out is saying, if you just take other people's advice, that you might end up rebelling, because that is, I don't think of myself in general in life as a rebel. I am like a very color inside the lines kind of person. I am like a lifetime member of Girl Scouts, or in your part of the world, Girl Guides. I am a just total Girl Scout. And so I don't think of myself as a rebel. I'm very vanilla. I'm very like in the lines. But I also do know this about myself, that when I feel restricted or regulated, I do rebel. So even with my own, this is going to be like such a weird connection, you guys. But when I grocery shop and I meal plan, like if I have a meal plan that's like on Monday, we're eating this, on Tuesday, we're eating this, on Wednesday, we're eating this, on Monday, I will make anything other than what is on the meal plan. I will rebel so hard. Same with like meal prep. If I prep all my lunches for the week, you can be almost guaranteed that the only one I will eat is the first one. And then after that, I will be going out to lunch instead of eating my meal prepped thing. Like I need to have choices and I need to have flexibility. And it's so funny that you said that, because I could feel myself like, as you were talking, I was like, I know that's me. I know that's what I would do. And so as much as I said, I want to hire a money babysitter, I also know I would just feel like a rebellious teenager. If they said, this is okay, here's your allowance, this is how you're allowed to spend it, I would be looking for ways to be rebellious.
Yeah,
that is just so interesting to have that kind of called out. And I just, if you can relate to this, just know you are not alone. We both just called that out. That is such a normal tendency, and that helps me feel more normal. Yeah. So I hope that it helps you feel more normal too. And I also think it goes back to that idea of creativity a little bit of, actually, I'm a person who thinks outside the box. I'm an innovator. I'm a visionary. I push boundaries. Like, actually, that's who I am. And that's, I think, more where that rebellious streak comes from. But anyways, thank you so much for all of this. My favorite tradition with Amanda on season one of this podcast is we used to finish off most of our episodes with what is making us happy right now. So I'm very curious. It can be business or personal. It does not matter. Most of ours end up being about food, but it can be anything you want. So for you personally, what is something that's making you happy right now?
Oh, I love this. It's something actually this morning. I was looking in my calendar for the week ahead and I was like, oh my goodness, I actually love my week. Sometimes we get to Monday and you're like, oh my goodness, I've got to get through all of these things. But I looked on that I'm going to speak to these great people. I've got these great things I'm going to. I just thought, wow, something's going right. Well, the things I'm saying, yeah, are the things I'm really like a real big yeses, rather than like when you slip things into the diary and you're like, oh, I'm not really feeling great about that. I was like, wow, these are real yeses this week. And it just made me think it's fun. That is good. Yeah, I'd love to know for you as well. What's been
Yeah, that's such a good one. Oh my gosh. I thought of so many things that I could say in this. So now I have to pick one. I think I'm going to
Yeah.
say, as cheesy as it is, I think it's this podcast. I actually have recordings scheduled in the next couple of weeks that will take me all the way through July. And I have some that are pending scheduling that hopefully will get on the books in the next couple of weeks that will take me all the way through September. And planning out,
Wow,
first of all,
yeah.
like collaborating with people like you and coming up with like our list of prompts of things we want to talk about or address, and looking at this whole list of the conversations we're going to have in season two of this podcast. Like, I'm so excited. And I've actually had to make myself like put it on the shelf sometimes and be like, you need to focus on client work. Like, you actually have a business to run, and you only have a certain amount of time allocated to work on this podcast, and then you have to do your like revenue driving work, Sarah. You have to take care of your clients. But it's just interesting because obviously I was so like part of me was so sad and like grieving the idea of not having Amanda on here every week with me. And we still talk all the time, almost every day, actually. But I was thinking, like, oh, I'm gonna miss her so much. And I want her on the podcast as often as I can have her on. And I'm so sad. And now I'm like, okay, but I can be excited at the same time. I'm sad, but I'm also excited. And I just think this was such a fun, interesting, deep conversation. And we just met, which is so fun.
Yeah,
That's my
really
favorite
fun.
thing, is like meeting people that you can just go deep with right away. But I just really, yeah, I loved this conversation. I'm so excited for season two of this podcast and all the things that it can continue to be. And I'm so like floored by the people who have submitted the form saying that they're interested in coming on the show. So if it's something that sounds good to you, do know that my calendar is filling up fast, but I would be happy to continue to fill it. I'm having so much fun. So you can learn more at bigbravebusiness.com if you want to connect with Harriet, which I know you do because this was an awesome conversation and you are so smart, Harriet. So I know the person listening
Oh,
definitely
thank
wants
you.
to connect with you. We'll definitely make sure all of Harriet's links are in the show notes, so you can definitely go find her. And like I said, bigbravebusiness.com is how you learn more about how to be a guest on the show. And you can also connect with me primarily on Instagram at Sarah K. Heater. As always, of course, that is going to be in the description as well. And I guess that's all I have for you this week. But thank you, thank you, thank you again, Harriet. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.